Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcher List podcast network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcher List's bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, we've got a big weekend coming up, and I sort of want to use this opening of the podcast to sort of like as an ad for PitchCon coming up. Pretty much the second, I would say the second biggest fantasy baseball conference, definitely the biggest virtual fantasy baseball conference. And you can't even really lock it into fantasy baseball. It's really just baseball in general. But we got four straight days of PitchCon. Both of us are going to be on there multiple times. So I'm super excited. Rick, when are you talking and what can listeners look forward to for PitchCon 2026?
Yeah, so I guess if you are listening to this podcast, the day it comes out, we'll be having PitchCon starting that day, so Thursday the 29th. I will be speaking Thursday night at 7 with Greg Jewett and Michael Carter. We're going to be doing a like reliever sleeper panel, which will be really fun. Then Sunday at 2, I am going to go over my top 50 closers, relievers for saves only leagues. I'm going to go over those top 50, 2 o'clock on Sunday. But then, yeah, we're both doing the mock draft as well Friday night, which will be fun. That's kind of a first. That's a new thing. But I'm really bummed out because, like, I mean, I know every panel is really good, but the first two panels on Friday are like ones I was really looking forward to. And my dentist appointment got moved to 11 o'clock on Friday, so I'm going to miss those two. And, like, I think that's the one with – there's one with Passan. I'm talking about, the lockout potentially next year, what can be done. Travis Sochik, it's a really good panel there. Bummed to miss that potentially. But, yeah, it's a really good weekend. And, yeah, like, it's, again, like, it's not just fantasy. It's all baseball. We're talking, I know Nick's talking to some pitchers or former pitchers, and just being able to talk baseball with a large group of people is always a good time and for a good cause.
Right. Raising money for ALS awareness. The good thing about PitchCon, though, is that after it's all over, if you did miss anything, we will upload it to the Pitcher List YouTube. So you still got the opportunity to watch those two you're missing for the dentist.
Right. I know. That's what I'll have to do. And that's what you get that you don't get necessarily if you go to like a, you know, an in-person conference. But everything will be on YouTube. You'll be able to go back and catch everything that you missed. But yeah, it's always a whirlwind weekend for sure. Once this starts,
Right. I'll be on there three times. As you mentioned, we're both doing the mock draft Friday night, but then both at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday and Sunday, I have two panels. One is going to be solo presentation, top 100 starting pitchers. Yeah. That's coming into focus real quick. That's going to be a big one. And if you really like to hear me talk, it's just going to be me for an hour. So that's going to be a blast. And then I'll hop on with Nate Schwartz and Peter Kreutzer on Sunday to talk about our favorite starting pitcher. So a little bit of crossover there for me, but it'll be nice to sort of compare with Nate and Peter. But they're both really smart guys. So excited for that. You can tune into PitchCon, as Rick mentioned, Thursday through Sunday. I think it's 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Yeah, well, all four. Well, the last thing's at 8, so probably 11 till 9 is when we have content going.
That those are long days, and you can catch it over on twitch.tv/pitcherlist. So make sure to tune in. It is a once in a year thing. Definitely worth the time to take out of your day to tune into that. You can always just plug in an earphone and do whatever you need to do while you're listening to those. Before I started working for PitcherList, that was one of my favorite events of the year, was tuning in, getting to comment in the comment section, sort of hang out with everybody and just see all the biggest names in the baseball community get together in one place. And once again, like you said, it's for a good cause, raising money for ALS awareness. But on this episode of In the Pen, we're obviously here to talk about relievers. Our main focus will be on team bullpen ranking. So we'll put all of the bullpens, all the teams into a ranking order, focus on some tiers to sort of group those bullpens together, get a better idea of what they look like in a larger context. But that will be our main focus. But as always, we're going to start off with transactions. We discussed last week how those have been dying down. And I think we can honestly say after this week, there's really nobody to keep an eye on from a fantasy perspective, because the top name off the board is gone. There will certainly be some guys who end up in hold situations, but I don't think we're seeing any more closers.
It's thin.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is thin. That's why we're seeing the trade market start to pick up for relievers too.
Yeah, I mean, even the small trades. Yeah, so just the little pieces moving around from organization to organization. It's that time of year now. The little peripheral 40-man moves. Yeah.
Right. Let's start with a minor one, as Jacob Junis signed with the Rangers for 1 year, $4 million. The team designated Dom Hamill for assignment in a corresponding move, and he was subsequently claimed by the New York Yankees. Jacob Junis is a former starter, but does decently well pitching out of the bullpen last year, sub-3 ERA. He just doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but in a weak Rangers bullpen, Junis could be somebody that has a major impact.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the plan or the I guess the hope for the Rangers is that he'll kind of function in a similar way he had, you know, he'd function last year for the Guardians, with, you know, can be used in high leverage if needed, but more of a length guy, give you two or so innings. I mean, $4 million, that's probably the most expensive, I mean, outside of Chris Martin, probably the most expensive guy in that bullpen. So yeah, maybe he's more of a setup, maybe functions as more of a setup guy this year. Obviously the closer role is kind of open. I don't think the Robert Garcia has technically locked that in yet, or is the sure thing closer so far. So definitely open, interesting landing spot for Junis. I don't think it's someone you're targeting in fantasy, even in holds leagues, of probably somewhat deeper leagues I'd be looking at, if any. But yeah, it's, I mean, the money that he's in, $4 million, a good chunk of change for a veteran, who's really just, I mean, that was his first full year, like, relieving and having success. So, and yeah, like you said, the Rangers bullpen is thin, so he'll definitely be, you know, functioning in some sort of important role there, at least starting the year.
He's always had more of a reliever profile with the slider focus, but
his slider is really good.
Yeah. But with the ability to pitch multiple innings, having been a starter throughout his career, really allows for a lot of flexibility in his usage out of the Rangers bullpen. That's Jacob Junis. Next, we've got Caleb Ort, who was DFA'd by the Yankees. We talked about that last week, or last podcast was a couple weeks ago. They DFA'd him to make room for outfielder Michael Cianni, but we talked about Caleb Ort a couple weeks ago because he has upside. He throws pretty hard. He's a pretty decent option out of the bullpen, and he landed with the Angels, who claimed him after the Yankees DFA'd him, and they just keep building one of the highest variance bullpens you will ever see. There's just so much upside here, but also with that comes a lot of downside.
I mean, they're just throwing darts at, like, guys seeing what's sick. I don't know if this is the third team or it's been on this offseason. Who knows if he sticks? If he was younger, I'm sure he would definitely be. He wouldn't be moving around as much. But at 34, with no options left, and kind of, you know, not the greatest results last year. He kind of broke out the year before. I thought the Astros had maybe figured something out with, or he still throws hard. But yeah, this bullpen, I know it's pretty. I don't know. It's high variance. There's a lot of guys who are definitely going to be in that bullpen, though. That's where it's, like, going to be potentially hard for him to find a role there. I mean, like, even a guy like Chase Silseth he's out of options already, so he needs to be in that bullpen opening day, along with Romano, Yates, Pomeranz, Stevenson. So that leaves, like, right now, looking at their bullpen and roster resources, only Zephyr John's the only guy with options that's still there. Mm-hmm. So that means, like, Are they gonna go opening day with Caleb Ort over, like, Jose Fermin? I mean, I feel like Fermin's probably the better option there. I know Fermin's got options, so you could, you know, play it that way. But yeah, we'll see. Still, for Ort, an interesting spot. I thought the Yankees, we talked about him last week with the Yankees, I thought that's, like, the kind of guy that the seventh person in your bullpen for a Yankee team, that their depth isn't really great. That's you know, when we're going to talk about all the team bullpens today, and that's, like, where the Yankees, it's like their top three is pretty good. But then after that, I mean, So yeah, we'll see if Wirt sticks. Kind of interesting in LA, especially with so just a wide open opportunity between 1 and 8 in that bullpen. It's like, I don't know what the difference really is. So yeah, it's a decent landing spot for now.
So the Yankees got rid of Caleb Ort to make room for Ciani, but then they got rid of Michael Ciani via DFA to make room for a trade they made with the Rockies as they brought in Angel Chavez.
Yeah, remember we've talked about him being like a swing strike darling, and I don't know, he's got that weird profile where he gets a ton of swing strikes, but doesn't have anything. Nothing else is positive in his profile. But the swing strikes are, I mean, that's something the Yankees will look to build on and try to. I think we talked about him like last year as kind of like a pitch mix thing. Obviously, Colorado is not helping the situation, but I think there's probably something. I haven't even looked into him that much. When I did the Rockies, I didn't even dive that deep into Chavilli. I thought he's more of a depth piece now, but there's still interesting. You know, the swing strike rate gives you some hope. I think his changeup is always his kind of his best offering, which is not a huge, not really something the Yankees focus on, but maybe they'll help develop something that breaks for him that's better and get his fastball working better or something. But interesting depth piece.
Yeah, I mean, he throws hard, 97, and as you mentioned, he's got that whiff heavy changeup. To me, he seems almost like a direct replacement for Mark Leiter, where he's a righty with platoon splits that you wouldn't expect, reverse platoon splits. So maybe he can be a righty that helps against lefties, because this is a lefty light bullpen. They really have Tim Hill and Ryan Yarbrough and nobody else. So having someone like Chavilli who can sort of be a quasi lefty.
The prospect they gave up for him was kind of, I think it was TJ Rumsfeld, is kind of an interesting one too, because he's probably blocked in New York first base, but someone who could factor into the Rockies first base situation, but also just someone that's even in the top 30 conversation being traded for Angel Chavilli is kind of interesting to me. So that makes me think that the Yankees are pretty high in bringing Chavilli in, and they obviously see something that they can do that the Rockies didn't.
Yeah, lots of upside there, in my opinion.
He's only 23, right? He's young. So, yeah.
Okay. He is young. Yeah, yeah, I think, 23, born in 2002. Yeah. That's crazy. Back to the Rangers, they re-signed Josh Spores, who we had been high on a couple of years ago after he closed out their World Series win over the Diamondbacks, but he just has not been able to stay healthy. It is cool to see the Rangers still showing faith in Spores and bringing him back via a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. So no guarantee that Spores is on the roster, but with what he's shown in the past, I think there's lots of upside and potential for him to slide right into a significant role in this, once again, very thin bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like going through that bullpen after Robert Garcia, and I Cole Wynn is in there too, but I'm not I think last year is definitely fluky, but then you got like Chris Martin, Jacob Junis, Alexis Diaz, Tyler Alexander. I mean, just completely wide open. So yeah, I think Spores, if he's healthy, he was supposed to return like middle of the season last year and then had a setback, and I'm hoping, you know, he's 100% right now. And if he's healthy and looks good in spring training, I think he easily makes the team opening day. So someone to keep an eye on, especially I think it's definitely leaning towards just looking at this, that like Garcia is going to get the first chance to lock down that closer role. Not someone I'm counting on to hold the role necessarily all year long. So if Spores gets off to a hot start, he could definitely make his way up the high leverage chart there.
The Mets have had a lot of turnover in their bullpen, losing their closer and a bunch of other guys, but they brought in Devin Williams, they brought in Luke Weaver, but there was a clear lack of depth in the Queens bullpen. They addressed that with some questionable moves, bringing in some real veteran pieces, some real old guys, most notably Luis Garcia. via a 1 year, $1.75 million contract, major league contract. So he's almost guaranteed a roster spot. And maybe that's not as notable as the next one. It just is more significant, I think. The other one, though, they brought in Craig Kimbrel via a minor league deal. So he's still kicking. His career's not over. I don't expect him to contribute anything here, but you can see David Stearns, the president of baseball operations for the Mets, at least attempting to build out the depth of this Mets bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it now, it's still, I think Kimbrel looked pretty good last year in a small sample. I would imagine he, as long as he doesn't look terrible in the spring, he probably opens the year in their bullpen. They could, you know, put Warren or Brazoban in AAA to start the year. Garcia, I mean, both him and Kimbrel and Garcia, it's the stuff is still kind of there. So yeah, it's still really thin though after those top three there, Williams, Weaver, and Rayleigh. But I think it depends on what's Tobias Myers' role there, and I think that's someone, you know, we can talk about the Freddy Peralta trade, and Myers is probably gonna get a chance to be stretched out and start in spring training, but he is probably better off in the bullpen. He had really good numbers out of the bullpen last year. Didn't walk anyone, but didn't really strike out anyone either. Mm-hmm. But he's still solid numbers with Milwaukee in the bullpen. So
he's like the Tobiest of Tobies. His name is literally Toby.
Tobias Myers.
Yeah.
But especially if they go with a 6-man rotation, then having that guy like Myers who can give you multiple innings out of the bullpen definitely helps. But yeah, they still need, like, if they could add, I guess AJ Minter is not here also. They haven't projected on the opening day IL, which is maybe likely, but he shouldn't be out too long. So when they get Minter back, it really, really helps a little bit too. But yeah, I'd still like them to, if they had one more righty in that bullpen, I think they'd be okay. Could be a starter. They might move us like that. I mean, if there's Clay Holmes at some point move back into the bullpen, I know he was pretty good as a starter last year, but like maybe he ends up second half of the year and back in the bullpen, that could be a difference maker as well.
Yeah. I know they want Jonah Tong as a starter, but his stuff definitely would be good out of the bullpen. I don't think they're going to do that, but that would be interesting. This next move, definitely very intriguing from a fantasy perspective. Taylor Rogers is returning to the Twins after a few years away via a 1 year, $2 million contract. He had a long career as the closer for the Twins, and he's entering a bullpen that did not have a clear front runner for the ninth inning role. And Rogers is definitely somebody that could take on that role. I'm surprised that he was not more coveted on the free agent market. It's not like he was bad last year, and he's been really good throughout his career. 3.38 ERA and a 24% strikeout rate last year across 50 innings, but only a $2 million deal, and he's a southpaw, but he will go to the Twins. What's your take on Taylor Rogers signing with the Twins? Is he the closer?
I mean, right now with this bullpen and him just being a veteran, and I still would trust him more than Justin Topa as far as the older guys in that bullpen go. So yeah, I think, you know, there's some nostalgia there too, where it's like, oh, we've seen him save 50 games in a Minnesota Twins jersey before. That can sometimes help.
Not in one season.
Not in one season, but in his career as a longtime Twin, I saw that trade when he was traded to San Diego. I did not realize, like, that's a very interesting trade to look back on from 4 years ago with Brent Rooker going with Taylor Rogers. And Brent Rooker, I mean, if he was still in San Diego, man. Rogers' velocity has been going down, and that's not a big part of his game anyway, but it has been dropping every year since, I think, 2021. He's always been a big called strike merchant. Still getting a ton of called strikes, but not getting like almost any swing strikes at this point. K rate's been dropping. K minus walk was 13.6 last year, his lowest since 2017. I think he's, you know, the fastball is definitely vulnerable. Sweeper's still really good, or it's definitely plus. probably something you might want to throw more. But yeah, he's just a two pitch pitcher with no fastball, no sinker. The sinker's not that great. So it's hard to rely on him as a closer, but given the situation here with, you know, Topo Sands, Sands was so hit or miss last year. He had a really good stretch at one point, but really bad to like kind of bookend the year. And then there's, you know, a lot of names to kind of, you know, Eric Orsi could be interesting, but yeah, I think for now Rogers is the favorite, but they could also add, I think Michael Kopech's been kind of rumored to be a target of theirs. I would prefer Kopech over Rogers if he ends up there. I don't know if I really don't think there's anyone else on the maybe Scott Barlow, that's the only other name, or Paul Sewald. Those are probably the three, Kopech, Sewald, Barlow, that would potentially take over Rogers as the closer there. But yeah, for now it's Taylor Rogers' job, I guess.
Well, the Twins added to their bullpen where they had a clear need, and so did the Nationals, but they did that by claiming Gus Varland. They have yet to really address what is a very weak bullpen at this point, because they traded away Jose Ferrer earlier this offseason, and they just got a bunch of young names there. But they brought Gus Varland in. He's a bit of a veteran. He did not pitch last year in the majors. He is the brother of Louis Varland and is a PLV darling, according to Pitcherless player page. Go check that out over at pitcherless.com. Gus Varland, though, 97th percentile PLV on his four-seamer. So that's a bit interesting. I would love to see him get a shot in this bullpen, because there seems to be some upside and there's really not many options.
Yeah, again, it's not even someone that I'm super interested in, but just that Washington bullpen is that's the most wide open bullpen in baseball right now. So anyone goes there who's had we've had some sort of like interest or intrigue in the past, I mean, it's worth mentioning. So we'll see. Varland's kind of been bouncing around teams as well. I don't know if he sticks in Washington, but if he makes the opening day roster,
if you can't stick in Washington, you're cooked.
Yeah, but they got rid of, they DFA'd Connor Pilkington today. It's like, that's probably your best, maybe either your best or second best lefty, and you just like giving up on him. Oof. So yeah, I don't know what they're doing in that bullpen. It's really bad. It stands out. We're gonna rank the bullpens. It's no one's really as close as Washington as far as I'm concerned. I think they're far and away the worst bullpen in baseball.
That is a fair point. A little bit of spoiler there. Lastly, probably most definitely the most significant signing from a relief pitching perspective over the past couple of weeks, Sir Anthony Dominguez signed with the Chicago White Sox on a 2-year, $20 million contract. And that really shakes up that White Sox bullpen, because I think we had been very keyed in on Jordan Leisure being the closer with the potential of Grant Taylor taking over if they use him in a more traditional way. But with Dominguez there in Chicago, I think that bumps Leisure out of that closer role and allows Sir Anthony to open the season as the closer. I am not totally convinced he holds it for the whole year. And to me, he seems like somebody that you maintain for the first half and trade at the deadline for a couple prospects. But that does really put a big damper on Jordan Leisure's potential fantasy impact.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm torn on Sir Anthony, looking at his, like, he's been changing his pitch mix a lot the last couple, like almost every year he's kind of changing things around, a lot of tinkering. I mean, obviously the strikeout numbers are great. I like seeing that. He's always had issues with command.
It was off the charts last year, 14% walk rate.
Yeah. And I think that's like, he started throwing a bunch of new pitches. Which got, like, you know, got a lot of swing and strikes and swing and miss. But if you're walking 14%, like, that's, especially we saw in like the postseason, his command wasn't great. And was, I don't know. He's going to get a chance to close, I think, right away. I think Leisure is the fallback option now. And yeah, I know there's a lot of people mentioning, like, oh, he'll be good until July and then he'll get traded, which, I know he's got a year left. He's got 2 years on the deal, but I still think a team would be interested in, if he's pitching well up until July, I'm sure teams would be interested in him. Contenders would be interested, at least. So,
right.
That's also something to keep in mind. But yeah, I struggling to kind of, I'm waiting for them to like fully announce he's the closer. I don't think it's really a competition, just given that he's getting $10 million a year and he's like the veteran of the group now. And he's got a little bit, he's got closer experience. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out where, before I, you know, reveal these rankings on Sunday, right, like, where does he fit in that? I think he's in the 20s. I just don't know where. Because that's a really murky area right now.
Yeah. Well, definitely interesting to see that shakeup. We probably got most of the closers locked in. I can't really imagine any future free agent signing shaking up bullpens to the degree of Sir Anthony Dominguez and Taylor Rogers moving forward. So that covers all the free agent and all the transactions from the past couple of weeks. Next, we're going to talk about some news and rumors from the past couple of weeks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers on the In the Pen podcast. We're going to discuss some news and rumors from the past week, couple weeks, starting with the Diamondbacks. And they may have a plan to use AJ Puck as the closer when he returns. GM Mike Kazin said that he would like to have somebody that has a clear pedigree of pitching in the eighth and ninth inning, but he's not sure if they'll be able to deploy their bullpen in that way. I think they hope to have Puck back within the first few months with Justin Martinez, their closer who took over after Puck went down last season, who has a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. He's targeting a second-half return, but with Puck expected to return before Martinez, I think they're going to want to deploy him as the closer as soon as possible.
Yeah, and that sounds like they're not going to name any sort of closer in or interim. Just going to play it with Ryan Thompson, Kevin Ginkle, Taylor Clark, try to get outs in the eighth and ninth inning with those guys. And yeah, it sounds like, I mean, I still think that's pretty ambitious of Puck to thinking Puck's going to be back as early as they're saying. Same with Justin Martinez. I thought he was for sure out for the year. He might still be. They're usually optimistic around this time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it makes you, if you have, you know, if you have IL spots in your league, and it's hard to find saves, like AJ Puck's down a late round flyer, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to spend too much on him, but someone definitely can remember and keep an eye on. We were high on Puck last year, and if he's back in the first half of the year, he could be a difference maker down the stretch.
Big draft and hold candidate for sure. AJ Puck is staying on the Diamondbacks and throwing in the Twins. Both teams are adamant that more bullpen moves are on the horizon. They're sort of running out of options, and maybe this was hinting at Taylor Rogers, but there's still some arms out there. This
was after Taylor Rogers.
Oh, this was after Taylor yeah. Rogers. Yeah, I mean, there's still a couple more arms out there. And for these lowly bullpens, I think any addition is going to be one that sticks. Yeah. But Mike Hazen once again was saying that the bullpen market is not done, and that there's also trades. There's that is another avenue to add to the team. And Pobo of the Twins, Derek Falvey, says that the Twins have been talking with multiple relievers and that they're close to being able to add some guys that they think will be able to add some experience to their currently inexperienced group.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about, it's like Scott Barlow, Michael Kopech, Paul Sewald.
Paul Sewald.
I mean, him in Minnesota would be interesting. I don't, like, why not? Just like, right. You know, like he's got more, he's a better option than Taylor Rogers in the ninth. See what happens. See if he's not healthy, if it doesn't work, then move on. But yeah, that's. You know, I've seen like Liam Hendricks' name thrown out there. I don't know what's left there, if anything.
Yeah,
it'd be cool if he could throw 96 again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. There's those two teams are like they really focus on starting pitching, and the bullpens are certainly questionable.
Right. And lastly, we have some bittersweet news. Former closer Ryan Pressly has retired from baseball. He had a pretty great career pitching for mostly the Twins and the Astros. He had a 117 saves throughout his career with a 3.33 ERA and a 1.18 WHIP. His career in baseball in general is not over, as the Twins hired him in a player development role, as he'll be assisting with both major and minor leaguers in the Twin system. But yeah, farewell to Ryan Pressly.
Yeah, that's a kind of figure that might be, you know, his knee has been bothering him for years now. But I mean, he was awesome. He was an awesome, you know, when I first like started, you know, covering relievers, it was kind of when he started, when he like broke out in Minnesota and then headed to Houston. Just, yeah, those ratios are awesome. Big strikeout guy too back in the day. Yeah, that's probably one of the bigger retirements we've had. We had Joe Kelly last week, and I think we had someone the week before as well. So, yeah, the Pressly will be missed on the field.
I think the first one was Eric Swanson.
Yeah, that's a young one. I mean,
yeah,
no one. I mean, Pressly. I love Ryan Pressly in his heyday, especially like when I started doing saves and holds, and he was just like one of those original like. Lock him into the top 10 of your whole like holds list. Like there was no one. I'm trying to think of who like the modern day. It's almost like, I mean, Brian Abreu in a way kind of like took that torch, then kind of just with the Astros and ran with it. So yeah, Pressly was so solid for so long. But yeah, his knee has been an issue for a while. I'm sure there's other things, but yeah, it's good career.
All right. Well, that will wrap up the news and notes. Now we can head into our main topic and discuss team bullpen rankings for 2026. I'm thinking just to add a little bit more suspense, we go bottom up. Do you think that would be weird?
Yeah, no, let's do, you don't want to start with the top.
Okay, perfect. All right, give people a reason to keep listening.
Yeah.
We also sort of spoiled this first one, so I think it works.
It could be quick.
Let's start from the bottom with the worst bullpen in baseball. And as you mentioned, it is a team that sort of stands alone. It stands out as being particularly bad in the current scheme of bullpens. And that's the Washington Nationals at number 30. Right now, they're projected to trot out Clayton Beter and Cole Henry as co-closers with guys like PJ Poulin, Julian Fernandez, and Jackson Rutledge setting up.
Yeah, Henry and Rutledge are not good. Poulin's okay. Fernandez has not done anything. Ribalta hasn't done anything. Griff McGarry hasn't done anything. McGarry's interesting. Beater's interesting. If one of those guys can throw strikes, like that's okay. Now we have something. If one of those guys learns how to throw strikes, and then it's just there's going to be at least one or two waiver claims probably in there that make it who it's going to be. I don't know yet. Could be Varland, could be who did we talk about last week? But yeah, it's just like Paxton Schultz. I don't know why they haven't, like, again, there's relievers out, there's a ton of relievers signing for like 1 to 5 million. Like, just get at least one of them, maybe, and then, like, you know, see worst case, you wasted 4 million on a reliever. Best case, you can flip him. Either he helps you win this year or you flip him at the deadline for a prospect. So that's the Nationals have had an awesome offseason. That's like the one thing that I'm I know they haven't really spent money. They're not going to spend a ton of money, but like bullpen is a place where you can, you know, you can at least add around, you know, add around Beter and some of the younger guys there. So yeah, they're. So basically the way I did these rankings was I finally got through my 300 saves plus holds rankings.
Wow.
And essentially just kind of like, okay, the guys in this tier get this, like get a certain amount of points and kind of added it up that way. So that's how these rankings work. So again, I'll just put these together too. So there's going to probably be a little weirdness in here. But the Nationals were like easy, like bottom, like there was no one near them. I think only Beter was in my top 250 too, because I really don't like Henry, or Rutledge. And then like the rest of it's just, we don't even know, like Pilkington's gone already. Yeah. So it's a mess.
It really just feels like the lowest floor I've ever seen. Like, there's just so much room for them to just be losing games specifically because of the bullpen.
If he has a 19% walk rate again, I mean, like, what, yeah. like, what are you going to do? Like,
what's their best reliever.
Yeah. Like, and that's been his walk rate throughout his whole minor league career. So it wouldn't be like, it shouldn't surprise anyone if he's still walking 19% of guys. And same with like Griff McGarry. Like, that's a super fun upside, but walk rate, man.
Yeah. What are we doing, Nationals? Our next tier moving up the list is the bullpens that are pretty bleak. We've got the Rockies, Giants, and Twins. The Rockies are currently going with Victor Vodnik as their top bullpen arm, but they've also got guys like Jimmy Hergett, Juan Mejia, and Seth Halverson. The Giants got Ryan Walker as their closer, supported by Joel Piguero, Eric Miller, and Jose Buto, while the Twins, who we've discussed quite a bit already today, just brought in Taylor Rogers, and they've got very little support in Justin Topa, Cody Funderburk, and Cole Sands.
Yeah, I mean, so with the Rockies, I mean, I might be a little unfair. I tend to move them just down by default. But like Hergett and Mejia they had really good seasons. They showed something last year. I don't know if either one is like able to replicate that or, you know, duplicate that again. And that's Hergett's a really bad fastball. He doesn't have a good fastball or sinker, whichever one he's trying to throw, his four seam or sinker. But his slider and curveball are both really good. So I honestly think he just needs to like throw those even more. But he has got some interesting stuff. Vodnik, Halverson, even Hill, Bernardino? Jaden Hill. Oh. No, not Bernardino.
But, gotcha. No, that makes sense. That makes more sense.
Hill and RJ Pettit, who they got in the Rule 5 draft. Very, very high upside arms there as far as bullpen guys go. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe they all break out. A couple of them break out this year.
It's one of the better Rockies bullpens I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that bullpen and a lot of velocity. We talked about it last year. Like, oh, they're starting to get that. Like, the young guys are starting to, you know, kind of make it through the system and debut, but we still haven't seen anyone really dominate there yet. So we'll see if someone takes a step forward this year. The Giants are another one that's like, you know, just what we haven't added. They added Sam Henkes there, and that's it. That's the call of the day after that to this bullpen that they lost everyone last year. I mean, they lost both Rogers. They lost Tyler Rogers and Rodriguez is out for the year. Ryan Walker was terrible as a closer, and Joel. I like Piguero. I think I think there's something there. It hasn't been unleashed yet. There's work to be done, but obviously, this guy throws 99. That's interesting. But there's like that relying on him as your second best reliever. Again, for a team too that's like trying to win, like now, like their lineup is built to win now. They have a rotation that's, you know, solid. I don't understand why there was no bullpen additions this offseason. And I guess in a similar, you know, way, fashion, the Twins, their lineup's not as good as the Giants, not close, but their rotation's really good. And, you know, if they just added someone better than Taylor Rogers, that might have been a difference maker. But yeah, there's no one. The top is sketchy, and then from there on out it's sketchy for all these teams. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see if Piguero makes a step, like if he can, you know, take a step forward and be that like eighth or ninth inning guy for the Giants, then that could change things here. But yeah,
both all these bullpens definitely need something really good to happen to have a successful campaign. The next tier is a trio of teams that are pretty blech in the bullpen department. Nobody, like, nothing exciting, but, you know, they might get the job done. We got the A's, who are fronted by Hogan Harris, Justin Sterner, and Mark Leiter Jr. We've also got the Diamondbacks with Kevin Ginkel, Andrew Salfrank, and Ryan Thompson, and the Texas Rangers, who are trotting out Robert Garcia, Chris Martin, and Cole Wynn. So all these bullpens definitely have a path to succeeding. But really the success they're looking for is to just like be mid at this point with the current collection of relievers they got.
Yeah, I think there's at least with these, this group more so than the last group is like, you know, the A's have like Sterner and Alvarado. They have a couple other younger arms that could be like legit difference makers if they make steps, make some progress. Arizona should get Puck back at least. That helps them. But they also like I like the flyer on Jonathan Weisiga. There's also a couple guys in there that throw hard, have some good stuff in the that have made debuts. They weren't great debuts, like Morello or Hoffman, Brandon Garcia from the left side. So there's some interesting stuff in Arizona if they can figure it out. And same with like Texas is another way. It's like, you know, there's some guys in that organization that the stuff is like if Teodo or Mark Church take a step forward, that could be big for them. But you also have even like an Otanias is there still. Mm-hmm. Or maybe Alexis Diaz figures something out. I'm holding my breath on that. But there's Josh Spores is back. That's cool. So there's some things there, and then you at least have Garcia and Martin there who should be anchors. So, I think it's these teams are a step forward, and there's a little bit of upside sprinkled throughout the organizations. But I don't see unless they make a huge trade, I don't see either any one of those three teams being like a top 10 bullpen.
Yeah, some pretty underwhelming bullpens there. The next trio of bullpens are kind of interesting, where they've got some upside and could certainly be top half bullpens, but aren't ones that are you have any reliance on. You don't have a lot of they're not really reliable. That's a good one. We've got the White Sox, the Cardinals, and the Tigers. The White Sox just added Sir Anthony Dominguez, and he's supported by Jordan Leisure and Grant Taylor and even Mike Vassell. The Tigers are trotting out a pretty solid bullpen, but you know, not one that has a lot of upside. Kenley Jansen, Will Vest, Kyle Finnegan, and then the Cardinals have got not a lot of the names that they've had in the past, but Riley O'Brien, Jojo Romero, Matt Svanson, and Ryan Stanek.
I like the Tigers and White Sox are kind of similar. I like the top three. The Tigers top three has obviously got more of a history. There's more of a floor with the Tigers group than the White Sox, which the White Sox group that top three with Leisure, Taylor and Sir Anthony, that's a lot of upside, but that could also fall off a cliff there, and that could be a disaster. But after those top three for both Detroit and Chicago, there's nothing really there that is interesting or is exciting. Tyler Holton is fine. Nothing really to get too excited about. Same with like Brandon Iseart in Chicago as their lefty. But you know, St. Louis is a little different because there's, especially with Stanek now, I know he's older, but still there's something there that if it never got figured out with Stanek, he could be really good. I think Riley O'Brien also, like there's like, I think he's like a tweak away from like being like a really, really good reliever closer potentially. Matt Swanson had a great year last year. He's not going to repeat that type of ratio. Those ratio numbers he had, but he could still be really good. And if Jojo Romero stays, that's a solid lefty for them as well. Then after those four, I don't know. But at least that top four is solid enough in St. Louis, but no one's really broken out yet. That's the thing. Like, I really like what Will Vest did for the first half last year in Detroit and what Kyle Finnegan did in the second half. But are they going to be able to put together like a full, like a real breakout season? I don't know. There's other guys on other teams that I still like a little bit better than them.
Sure. Next, we'll move into the top 20 bullpens in baseball. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing the top bullpen rankings. Are you making a last minute adjustment?
No, we'll keep the Angels here.
All right. So coming off of a tier that was kind of interesting. Now we've got a risk reward tier, teams that are very high variance where there's a big ceiling, but a very low floor as well. We've got the Angels, Royals, Marlins, and Pirates. The Royals are trotting out Carlos Estevez, Lucas Erceg, Matt Strom, Nick Mears. There's a lot of interesting names here. We've also got the Angels with Robert Stevenson, Drew Pomeranz, Kirby Yates, Jordan Romano, Ryan Zephyrjohn, Ben Joyce on the way as well. For the Marlins, without Ronnie Henriquez, they're not as interesting, but they did bring in Pete Fairbanks. They've got Calvin Fauché and Anthony Bender with Josh White coming out of the minor leagues as well, and Andrew Nardi coming off of injury. And then the Pirates have become a pretty high upside bullpen too, with Dennis Santana, Gregory Soto, Isaac Mattson, Justin Lawrence, and most notably Mason Montgomery.
Yeah, I think Montgomery pushed them up here. But yeah, Soto, Santana, there's this is kind of like Pittsburgh and Kansas City, where the closer is steady technically, but like I'm not so sold on either one, Santana or Estevez. But behind them, that's where things kind of get interesting. And there's, you know, like Erceg, if he can take some sort of step forward this year, where I know the ratios were fine last year, but he still took a huge step back strikeout wise and swing and miss wise, which is really weird considering his stuff. And there's other arms there that are like Alex Lang, we've talked about, could be interesting. Maybe even a guy like Steven Cruz. And then, yeah, Pittsburgh, obviously Montgomery is the big wild card there. And Harmon, I know Mladzinski's going to start as the favorite to win that fifth starter job. But if he ends up moving back to the bullpen, if everyone's healthy and Jared Jones comes back, like Mladzinski will be back in the bullpen, and that's a place where he can thrive. And I think between him, Montgomery, Justin Lawrence, even without Soto or Santana, that's a pretty good group there. So yeah, I mean, we talked about the Angels. There's up and down. This is the peak risk reward bullpen, where like Kirby Yates could be really good, or he could be what he did last year. Robert Stevenson could not be healthy. Ben Joyce could not be healthy. Zephyrjohn could. I mean, Zephyrjohn had such a peak and valley season last year that could repeat again. Romano, who knows? Again, so. Miami too. Without Henriquez, it's sad. But I mean, Fairbanks was probably put together his most consistent season last year. He could do that again, or he could, you know, miss some time again, or have some issues, who knows. Behind him it's Fauché and Bakar and Bender and Nardi. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Nardi returning. I think if he's healthy, that's a big boost for them. But yeah, it's I don't hate the Marlins bullpen, but again, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of kind of risk reward there.
All right, so we had high upside there. The next tier is bullpens that maybe look good from an outside perspective. Like when I run through these names and mention the top guys, they're going to sound really good, but these are bullpens that don't really have a lot of depth. We've got the Yankees, Red Sox, Orioles, and Mets. The Orioles are running out Ryan Helsley, Andrew Kittredge, Keegan Aiken, pretty solid top core. The Red Sox have got Aroldis Chapman, Garrett Whitlock, Justin Slayton. That's about it. And then the Yankees are a similar situation as well. David Bednar, Camilo Duval, Fernando Cruz, and then a bunch of other guys, while the Mets are top heavy as well, with Devin Williams, Luke Weaver, and Brooks Raley heading the bullpen.
Yeah. These are the teams that just the depth is concerning, especially with the Yankees, Red Sox, and Mets more so. The bottom halves of those bullpens, I do have issues with or worries about. Some upside with all of them, like Zach Kelly for the Red Sox is intriguing to me. We've talked about with the Yankees, Hedrick being kind of an interesting there if he can hold on to a roster spot. I don't know, maybe Jake Bird can figure something out this year now that he's been in New York for a while. The Mets too, I guess when AJ Minter comes back, that definitely helps give them a boost. But yeah, the Orioles, I do think that there is some depth there, potentially some sneaky depth there. I do like Rico Garcia. We don't have a huge sample size from him, but his fastball metrics are really good. And Dietrich Enns was really good for them as well last year in the bullpen. So I think, like, you know, those are two guys no one really knows about that could play big, big roles there behind Helsley and Kittredge. Like, I do worry about Aiken and guys like Stroud and Selby have some intrigue and some upside there. But yeah, it's really Enns and Garcia for me behind Kittredge and Helsley. Those two guys might be something for them. Those might have been some finds, which really hurts the Mets because the Mets gave up on Garcia in August of last year. Mm-hmm. So that's a guy I feel like they could really use in the middle of their bullpen.
All right. Well, from top heavy bullpens to bullpens that are good throughout, the next five teams are the Phillies, Guardians, Reds, Cubs, and Braves. The Guardians have consistently had one of the best bullpens in baseball. They've got Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, Sean Armstrong, and Eric Sobrowski in the NL Central, or first the NL East. The Braves got Raisel Iglesias and Robert Suarez and Dylan Lee, Tyler Kinley, Aaron Bummer. It just keeps going. The Phillies are another team that are really deep. Yoan Duran, Jose Alvarado, Brad Keller, Ryan Kirkering. Love that group a lot. And then in the NL Central, the Cubs beefed up their bullpen. Daniel Palencia, Phil Maton, Hunter Harvey, Caleb Thielbar, Jacob Webb, Hobie Milner. Ton of names there. And the Reds as well. Emilio Pagan, Tony Santion, Graham Ashcraft, Pierce Johnson, and a whole host of young guys as well, including what's that guy? Connor Phillips and the other one.
Zach Maxwell. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Luis May, if that works out.
That's a very interesting bull. They're like what the Angels wish they were.
Yeah, they're like the more advanced version mm-hmm. of what the Angels are. The Angels is just super risk reward, but the mm-hmm. the Reds, there's upside there, as well as I think Pagan's at least solid. He solidified himself as a good reliever, possibly a great reliever, and Santillan behind him as well. And they did a good job adding lefties to that bullpen this year. Not flashy lefties, but Ferguson and Brock Burke are still, you know, more than serviceable at this level. All of these teams, like the depth, even Cleveland, you go down, like Matt Festa had a pretty good, you know, breakout year last year as their fifth or sixth reliever. The Phillies adding, they lost Matt Strom, but they brought in Jonathan Bolin, who I think could be really good. The Cubs, they've been adding this whole winter to that bullpen between mm-hmm. Matone, Hunter Harvey. They brought back Thielbar, brought in Milner. They have even their like minor league depth's good. And if Ben Brown ever sticks in the bullpen there, that's even a bigger plus. Atlanta's going to have a really good, even their AAA depth in their bullpen is going to be pretty good in Atlanta. So especially if they add, they're talking about adding like another starter, which would move, you know, kind of have an effect where it'd move, definitely keep Grant Holmes in the bullpen or move him to the bullpen, possibly move some other guys into a bullpen role as well. So, I think Atlanta top to bottom, really one of the deeper bullpens in baseball right now.
All right. So those bullpens have a lot of depth. And now we get into the top seven. Really, these are the cream of the crop for bullpens. And this group, the second to last group, are the ones that just they have everything. They have depth. They have high upside. They have guys at the top that are steady veterans as well. We got the Padres, Astros, Dodgers, Rays, and Brewers. The Rays have got Edwin Uceta, Griffin Jacks, Garrett Clevenger, Brian Baker, and a whole host of other names, and probably guys we've never even talked about that will emerge at some point in the year. The Astros have got Josh Hader, Brian Abreu, Brian King, and they've had a lot of success turning a bunch of different guys into well-known relievers. The Brewers have always been one of the best bullpens in baseball. Abner Uribe, Trevor McGill, Jared Koenig, Aaron Ashby, and Angel Serpa. He's probably going to be a starter, but we'll see how that pans out. And then in the NL West, the Dodgers got Edwin Diaz this offseason, which was huge to pair with Tanner Scott, Blake Treinen, Alex Vesia, and all their failed relievers, including World Series hero Will Klein. And lastly, the Padres, who had one of the best bullpens last year, and now get a full year of Mason Miller alongside Adrian Morahone, Jeremiah Estrada, and guys with incredible names like Bradley Rodriguez.
See, yeah, so originally San Diego was further down this list, but then I realized that I wasn't accounting for Jason Adam, who should be back in the first half. That's a huge addition because, you know, after they were, to me, they were like in that top heavy tier because it was, you know, that top three, obviously Miller, Morahone, and Estrada are awesome. After that, I mean, David Morgan, maybe there's something there. There's more there than I'm missing, but he's not like a top 100 reliever for me. None of those guys are like Bradley Rodriguez could be a top. He's got ridiculous stuff. He could be a top 100 guy, but we haven't seen it yet. So, yeah, even though they are top heavy, though, like that top three is still like I should be, you know, that top three is better than pretty much. I mean, it's probably the best top three in baseball between Miller, Morahone, and Estrada. So they deserve a little bit more love. But then, yeah, I mean, like Houston is running the back with all their lefties. Houston and Milwaukee have so many lefties, and they have like most of the good ones, it feels like. Especially Milwaukee, if I think they're slated to have five lefties. Between Koenig, Ashby, Zerpa, Zastrinsky, and DL Hall. Hall was not great last year, but again, there's obviously some upside there. We know what his you know prospect pedigree is. But Ashby was really good. Koenig was awesome last year, and I think obviously they're really high on Zerpa because they gave up a lot for him. So I think you have Uribe, McGill, and then it's like even deep after that, it's a solid bullpen. But the top two are obviously awesome in Uribe and McGill. Tampa Bay, I'm still, you know, fully sold on Griffin Jackson, Edwin Uceta, yeah, and Garrett Clevenger being the third guy there is a luxury to have, especially as a lefty. But then you can supplement it with Brian Baker, and there's, you know, Cole Sulcer was pretty good last year. He's like, you know, Tampa Bay will always find one or two relievers throughout the year. You've never heard of that will be just really good. And then, yeah, I mean, the Dodgers, yeah, it's, you know, they just can't, like, no matter what, they're going to be, whether it's their bullpen, their starters, their offense, it's going to be a top 5 or 10 unit, no matter what. And yeah, Edwin Diaz definitely bumps them up a huge amount here. But even still, I like Scott as a comeback option here in holds leagues. Probably can get 5 or so saves as well. Vessie is still great. I don't know. Treinen might have something left in the tank. Gratterall coming back. I don't know what we see there, but be fun to see him at least pitching again. And yeah, Will Klein had that really good World Series run, but we've talked about him a lot. Like there aren't a lot of prospect relievers, but he was always one of them. Like that was someone we were, you know, noticing when he was getting moved around, and the stuff there is real. And the Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers have one of the best player development staffs in the league, if not the best. So maybe they can get Klein to have, you know, take that step forward. And then Edgardo Henriquez is even on that opening day. Ben Kasparius. I mean, you can go to Triple A. The Dodgers are just ridiculous. It's just so many riches there. That whole the Triple A bullpen is really good there. It's probably definitely better than the Nationals bullpen. I'll say that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Any team in this tier could end up as the top bullpen in baseball, and it would not be surprising. That leaves two teams in the final tier, the top tier. These are basically near perfect bullpens. We've got the Toronto Blue Jays, and then at number one, the Seattle Mariners.
ALCS.
The Blue Jays. That's right. So we could see a rematch again at some point in the World Series, or in the playoffs. But the Blue Jays got Jeff Hoffman, Jimmy Garcia. They brought in Tyler Rogers. They got Louis Varlin last year. They got Brandon Little, and they have a ton of depth as well. And then the Mariners, even better, Andrés Muñoz, Matt Brash. They traded for Jose Ferrer this offseason. They got Eduard Bizzardo, Gabe Spire, Carlos Vargas, and probably a ton of depth in the minors as well. And both of these teams have been really good at pitcher development as well. So definitely understand why these are the top two teams. They were incredible last year. They added more players this season, this offseason, and they got guys during the trade deadline last year that will contribute for the whole season in 2026. So yeah. Blue Jays and Mariners, the top two teams.
Yeah, the Blue Jays initially kind of surprised me how high they ranked here when I put these together. But it's depth. Obviously, Hoffman's going to bounce back from last year's debacle. The home runs aren't good. He's not going to give up a million home runs again. He's in the, you know, second tier of relievers. And then from there on out, it's like, you know, Jimmy Garcia, he needs to stay healthy, but I'm excited for him being back this year. He was off to a great start last season. And they go 8 or 9 deep in this bullpen. And like Rogers is a big acquisition for them, obviously. We haven't even seen Louis Varland at his best as a reliever. I think that's still to come. I mean, Brandon Little had a huge breakout as their top lefty last year. Tommy Nance, no one even knows or cares about, but he was actually really good in a small sample for them last year. And even like Eric Lauer, if he's in the bullpen for them, he was really good out of the bullpen for them last year. And then, like, that's not even including, I think, two of their best relievers are slated to start in AAA, and Braden Fisher and Mason Flaherty. So, again, you talk about, like, AAA depth. Like, the Blue Jays have it, plus they have that type of upside in Hoffman and Garcia and Varland that just puts them in a little bit above some of these other teams, I think. The Mariners, I mean, I think the Ferrer move put them above everyone else. And they're still looking to add. I don't know. I mean, they added Cooper Criswell, but I think they're actually looking to add. I think they were still linked to Jojo Romero even after getting Ferrer. So they want to add a third lefty and imagine having a lefty trio of Ferrer, Spire, and Romero. I mean, that's nuts. To go with Munoz, Brash, Bizardo, who was so good last year and so good, especially in the second half in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Carlos Vargas is a guy too who shouldn't be slept on if he takes a step forward, because his stuff, he's got the stuff to be, you know, a high leverage guy as well. So seven guys on the 40-man roster list, relievers, and starting in AAA this year as of now. It's like Troy Taylor, who's kind of a prospect reliever for them. Alex Hoppe from the Red Sox is an interesting name. They just got Zulieta from the Reds as well. They're really deep, really just talented all around. Definitely, I think when you include that starting rotation in Seattle, I think it's pretty fair to say that the Mariners have the best pitching in all of baseball. I think that's the one that's where top to bottom rotation to starters through relievers, I think the Mariners are the best pitching organization in baseball right now.
No argument with that. I think really overall only the Dodgers and Blue Jays could definitely give Dodgers them a run for their money.
I know. I just don't want to say the Dodgers.
No, but thank you. I appreciate that. Definitely much different podcast today than a couple weeks ago when we had the Kyle Tucker reaction, but I think it's nice to sort of encapsulate what the changes that we've seen throughout the offseason, how those have affected the standings of bullpens, which bullpens have sort of improved and which haven't. Maybe that's something we talked about in a future episode, which bullpens have improved the most. But that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Right now, yeah, we talked about earlier in the show, we have PitchCon coming up this weekend. And then pretty much done with my initial rankings for the winter, which shall be out sometime between next week and after the Super Bowl at some point, but we'll also trying to get out our draft guide as well in there. And a lot of good stuff coming from Pitcher List this winter for sure.
All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. As we mentioned, you can catch me on PitchCon all throughout the weekend. And you can probably catch my top 100 starting pitchers coming out next month. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned to everything going on at Pitcher List, and definitely make sure to tune in to PitchCon over the weekend, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on twitch.tv/pitcherlist. That'll do it for this episode 147 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.